Is paid for by IMIC Incorporated.
The Cure with Amy Cabo is brought to you by IMIC Research. Life can bring many difficult situations, domestic violence, addictions, poverty, and even sexual abuse by your loved ones. Welcome, Amy Cabo and The Cure.
Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us today. I'm your host, Amy Cabo, and this is The Cure. Our show is available live on the radio or through the app called The Cure. Our website is godisthecure.com. On Roku, look for The Cure or Android TV under The Cure. Later, the show will air on Sirius XM, Channel 131, Sundays at 5 p.m. or as a podcast. I'm also joined by Dr. Boris Nikolov.
Hello, how are you?
We created this show as a safe space and to show that there is hope after going through difficulties, whether you're struggling or not, no matter what type. I'm trying to use testimonies to that effect and inviting professionals and speakers that can help with suggestions. As a survivor, I hope to inspire others, encourage transparency, and find strength in knowing that those who suffer are not alone, and those that heal against insurmountable odds do exist. Today, I want to talk about effective leadership in the workplace. Many of us can suffer by having additional stress unnecessary, which is detrimental to our physical well-being when it comes to work, and we can easily fall into depression when we can't seem to make it happen in the workplace, and God forbid, as a result, we can end up jobless, even homeless. Our special guest is Joe Leon. Joe Leon is a globally recognized leader that has effectively navigated and led through the ever-changing culture challenges of the modern workplace over the last 30 years. His life has spanned from the beginning his entertainment career at age 8, living out of his car's back seat, to executive producer to overseeing over $10 billion in design and install in the entertainment industry. Joe, thank you so much for being with us.
Amy and Boris, thank you very much. Good morning. I appreciate the time that you've allowed us to have this morning. Just real quick, and my apologies. The last name is Leone, though.
A
pleasure to be with you and to spend some time. Your story is amazing. For me to have the opportunity to talk to you is a blessing.
Oh, thank you. The pleasure is mine. Trust me, Leone, now that I've got it right.
Okay.
I read your bio that you started your career in entertainment at age 8, and you excelled as a senior vice president position. Not without some ups and downs, I'm sure, along the way. Can you share some of them with us?
Certainly. When I was preparing for the show this morning, I will tell you that we all go through challenges, as you admit, and why you've created this show. And part of it, as I go through this, I just am so impressed by the challenges that you have overcome. I sometimes look at mine and go, you know, mine's just life. You had some serious challenges, but don't we all, right? And the challenges that we come in front of are ours. And no matter how big or small, if they're in front of us, they're large to us. But no, I've been blessed. It did start at third grade. My third grade teacher went to my parents and said, "Listen, your son has an ear," is the way it was put to her, my parents, and suggested I go sing and play an instrument, trumpet, and so that kind of got me on the entertainment side. And I'll be the first to admit, and I think a lot of human beings, although one of the biggest fears is to be on stage. We love adulation, so being a young child and being on stage and clapping and all of that certainly struck a chord with me, and very early on. Everybody around me knew who I was, and I was going to be in entertainment. And that was twofold. It was one, because I loved doing it. I loved singing and all of that. But it also, I'm a second generation Italian immigrant, and we moved to Phoenix, Arizona in 1967. And one of the common things that we have, and I try and tell people in my leadership, is the lessons I've learned in the diversity of all of us, yet some of those are the things that we have so much in common. And so entertainment gave me the ability that growing up in Phoenix, I gravitated to the Latin community and the Native Indigenous Native Americans in Phoenix, mainly because, again, I'm Roman Catholic, so the church. It was where I made a lot of those connections. And so very early on in the diversity of that I was on in my life, entertainment was also a very natural way to do that because of all the industries extremely diverse in regards to the people. And so the creativity and all that very early on just fed a passion of mine that just never stopped. And so because of that, and I think all of us, once you find that passion and you get the confidence to go after it, the challenges that were then in front of me to get there were just that, just challenges to do that. So sang all my life, did my first European tour when I was 14 years old with the Phoenix Boys Choir, and as usual did all the other stuff and sang and had a band and was enjoying that. And after I graduated high school and around 20 years old, I went to my bandmates and everything's like, you know, this is all fun with the band and we can sit in Phoenix and wait to be discovered, or we can actually try and do this. And most of my friends were, although extremely talented, were into it more for the old adage, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And so I picked up and I moved to Southern California, L.A., without knowing a soul.
Wow.
And I said I was going to get in the entertainment business. And so those first few months, I was by myself and in my car. And I went to the pawn shop and bought a used acoustic guitar case for, I think it was $10. Went back behind the Greek Theater and walked up to the cage and said, my name is Joe Leone, I'm with the band. And the guy looked down on his list and said, I'm sorry, sir, I don't see you on the list. I said, I'm not going to be on the list. I'm Joe. I'm with the band. And he gave me a little bit of more trouble. And long story short, after being persistent, he let me in. I did that through a lot of venues through L.A., and within 6 months, everybody just saw me around. So, of course, I was supposed to be there. I lived through the riots of L.A. with my wife. I tell people it was another life experience that helped me a lot. But I was not in L.A. in during the Northridge quake. I was still on the road with entertainment. And it took me about a day and a half for me to get a hold of my wife. And she had family living in Las Vegas at that time. That was around 92, I believe, 93, give or take, maybe a year prior. And I said, I'm moving you to Las Vegas. You have support. A year after that, she says, the Golden Nugget is hiring. You know, why don't you try and get off the road? And 1989, I'm doing the Reggae Sunsplash World Tour all over the world, 100,000 Japanese, 48 weeks. And in July of 1994, I'm mopping the stage in the 400-seat theater in downtown Las Vegas, asking myself if I made the right career choice. And I sit here today and say I love every adventure I've gone through to get to where I am at today.
But that's amazing. I mean, I read that you were living in the backseat of your car and you did all these things with your life. That must have been your saving grace, your talent. I mean, with the help of God, of course.
The grace of God, and I did have family. I ultimately, I'll be honest with you, we found a great aunt of mine who lived in Southern California at some point in time. I've always wanted to be on my own. When I turned 50, my mother's friends asked her, you know, wanted to give her a time because I got old, and how was Joe handling 50? And my mother tells everybody, Joe's been 50 since he was 9. the drive, but I did have family and some support, by the grace of God and focus, I was able to get through those challenges.
Your story is an incredible story because you did not let circumstances define you or the fact that your life started out hard. I mean, you were practically homeless. And I remember having this conversation with somebody that I tried to tell them, everyone has the same opportunities. God gives us different gifts and different talents. And somebody says, well, unless you're born in bad circumstances, so welfare family or poor, you don't have the same opportunities as other people. And I know what it's like to be poor, even though my parents were both doctors. And I know, but I can tell you that when I was poor, I wasn't suffering. I was happy as long as I had food to eat. I had a roof over my head, and I still had my daughter, which was the only thing I had in the world. And that was good enough for me, that I had my kid. But I became more than I ever thought I could. I excelled with the help of God. And It doesn't matter what circumstances you're born to. If you have God in your life, anything's possible, and you're a great example of that.
And I would agree with that. The only thing I would counter a little bit, Amy, though, is, and I agree as far as we all get opportunities. And when I do speak, and especially a lot of times at an education level and or if I'm in the inner city, the one thing that I will counter, though, and we all need to understand, though, is to your point in regards to where you may be born or your economic status, the difference is the amount of opportunities you may get. And some of that, and I'm not talking on the spiritual side or whatever, but just in general. And so both those of us that are in a position that have the ability to give people an opportunity should take that advantage at all times because it is so, so important to everybody. But even more importantly, I'm talking to young people, the same thing. Is there something keeping you down? Is there somebody or whatever? Yes, we all have that, and some have more. And the ones that have more challenges, unfortunately, don't always have as many opportunities. But that's why it's important to be aware. Have your eyes open. I use the word vision all the time. So that you can recognize those opportunities when they come to you. Does somebody in a better zip code, through their life, by just chance, have the opportunity to be more successful, take advantage of things? Absolutely. To somebody that has the unfortunate, not unfortunate, that's not the right word, but is born into a lower zip code, do they still get opportunities to get out of there? Absolutely. Are they as relevant, as visual and in front of them, and as many? No. And that's why it's important when I can to sit there and have people recognize that and be aware of the opportunities to do that. And one of the first ways to do that is any problem, anything that's always in front of you, look in the mirror first.
And
what can I do?
Could challenges lead to opportunities? Like, let's say one door closes, another one opens, or a better way, as in life's learning lessons. I mean, if you really put your heart into it and you really want something, I think anything is possible. And if there isn't the opportunity, I'd look for the opportunity. If it wasn't there, I'd go somewhere else. If it wasn't this way, I'd find another way. If I didn't have, I'd improvise. It depends on your frame of mind, how badly you want to be where you want to be.
Or you just feel defeated and just stay where you are and don't do anything.
But that's pickpocket.
Well, and it's also, you know, the old adage, doing the same thing over and over again is the definition of insanity.
Yeah.
So that's also the things we have control over. Are there people that, I mean, don't have enough money for the rent or food or bills? And it's no fault of their own. They are trying hard. They are getting up every day and doing that. Yes, of course. But if you're doing all that, even if you're doing your, quote, believe best, or trying to do your best in everything, if you continue to do the same thing, and in 3 months, 3 weeks, 3 years, whatever it is you're going after, you're looking back, beating your head up against the wall, asking why hasn't it changed, there are probably some things that are out of your control that are preventing that. But I assure you, if you've been doing the same thing for a year, you're part of the problem.
And it doesn't...
You would have to either change the goal or change how you're doing it, because repetition is fine. We're trying to learn something, but repetition to change something, I have not been in my life experience seen that work too often.
No, it's true. If it doesn't work one way, try another way. That's what I always say. There's no point in continuing the same thing. I mean,
I love a quote from Tamara Levitt that, you know, with awareness, we can make conscious choices instead of letting our habitual thoughts and patterns run the show.
That is so very true. And the beautiful thing about it is, even if we don't have it in us, or even if we're not in the mood to do the right thing, you know, believe it or not, God puts the right person in our place, like leaders, people who can help us. And I believe that we can be there for each other. I think human interaction is the most important thing in life, and that's how we survive. We're not an island. But for those that are tuning in, I'm your host, Amy Cabo, and this is The Cure. Today's show is focusing on effective leadership and workplace. We are joined by Joe Leone, and you're listening to The Cure. I'm your host, Amy Cabo.
And now we continue with Amy Cabo and The Cure on 880 The Biz.
Welcome back. And those are that just tuning in, you're listening to The Cure with Amy Cabo. Today we're joined by Joe Leone, and we're talking about effective leadership in the workplace. And we were just discussing earlier about how Joe came from starting basically with nothing and made it very prominent in the entertainment world. And Joe, I have a little surprise for you. Coincidentally, I have today with me Little Michelle.
Hi.
Hello, Little Michelle.
She is my 11-year-old daughter, and she's an inspiring artist. She sings. She has a beautiful voice, but has no training yet. Yeah. We just discovered her.
Well, that's wonderful. And as my father always used to say to me, Michelle, God has given you the voice. It would be a shame that you do not share it with the world.
Go ahead. You can talk.
Okay. So basically, since I was younger, I've done a few big... I don't know if this is important. But, like, I've done a few big things. Like, I've sang on a boat, and I've done, like, a few things.
And she sang the Star Spangled Banner. But, you know, we're just starting out. And it's just a lot of fun.
Singing makes you feel good, doesn't it?
Yes. I listen to Ariana Grande every single day.
Well, I'm sure she's very happy that you do that. When I was very young, my mother gave me a plaque that said, God gave us music so we could pray without words.
You know, I'm very dependent on music. Music moves me. Like that song that I just played, 100 Bad Days Makes 100 Good Stories. I love that song. That's my life. Okay, so I had 100 bad days, but you know what? They make 100 good stories. It makes me fun at parties.
Oh, and I'm so with you. When people look at my eclectic music choices, I tell them it is because it depends on the mood, what I'm trying to do, what I want. You know, do I need to get picked up? Do I need to relax? And so whether it's jazz or country or hip-hop or whatever. So, no, music is, if I physically feel if I have been away from music too long. I got to turn something on, sing something, pick up a guitar that I'm not very good at. But I have to do somehow get music into my life. And I'm lucky, Michelle. I have a 17-year-old daughter, and she's a dancer. So if I'm not listening to music, I always get to sit there and watch her dance and listen to her. So just keep up with your dream, young lady. And even if you don't do it professionally, always remember that is a gift and a blessing, and share it with the world.
Uh-huh, and I still watch Dance Moms.
I think there is a more loving way to motivate children, but it's still a very successful show.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it was an absolute pleasure to meet you, Michelle.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you.
Joe, and it's amazing. I wanted to ask you, there was a... something else that I was reading, that you say, a vision for the modern workplace is the title of your keynote speech. Can you tell us what you mean about that?
From a general standpoint, it's amazing if you're lucky enough to look back on your life and the challenges that you go through, the lessons that you learn through those. So through that, and I've been lucky, I have managed here large productions and construction, et cetera, through Gulf War, 9/11, 2008, recession, et cetera, and those experiences. And I started to notice, certainly in the last few years or so, that I just get a feeling that most businesses, other than the obvious ones, pharmaceutical, technology, et cetera, but in general, really are not running on a clear vision, first and foremost, who they are, and then where they're going.
Okay.
They're looking in the windshield, basically just trying not to hit anything. And that's not always their fault, because in today's day and age, with just the speed of data and information and what you have to deal with, all the tools that, one, either worked for me and didn't, and I tell people all the time, the things that we have put together for visions and that I put really have more to do what I have done wrong in my career than what I have done right. and to learn those lessons. But I came to the realization that we really are living in a wonderful, wonderful time. No time in man's history that we're aware of, and excuse me, Amy, man, woman's history, we have as much information.
Okay. Wow, man. Joe, okay.
I don't understand men as plural.
Well, the definition of men, speaking about that, is actually includes men and women, right?
I agree with you, but it was all when I do that in the world we live in, it's important also. We have, as men, though, we have to understand that could still be sensitive, though, and understand why.
Okay.
Yeah,
especially if I'm talking to a woman.
Yeah, okay. You're polite.
Hello, Miss Amy.
It's all good. So what you're trying to say is that...
Oh, Amy, I'm sorry I lost you.
Yes, you were talking about the workplace and how we need to know where... The workplace needs to know where it's at as far as it's how it's functioning.
Like the company.
Yeah, and...
The company.
And so I do believe in most cases in today's day and age, people keep going back to the same playbook. And we are nowhere near the same playbook. In fact, there isn't even a playbook, I believe, right now that is written to manage what it is that we're going through in today's day and age. And what we're trying to do at Visions also, although I do interviews like this and I keynote speak because it's important. It's important for me to even get more education and get out there and talk to people. But I do really truly believe that we keep going back to a playbook that does not exist anymore. The most executives, leadership, and companies today have to manage the most diverse workforce that any time in business that I'm aware of in humankind history. In the past, even if it was, quote, diversified in any kind of way, it was still tribal. You still were surrounded by people that looked like you, thought like you, things like that. And that's not even, of course, you can get into the modern era when that was done, you know, for the wrong reasons, et cetera. But just from a human standpoint, and in today's day and age, in most cases, that is not the case. Even if you are surrounded by like-minded people with a like-minded goal that you're going after, that is still a group of people that have had way more different life experiences. And to sit there and lead and manage that, I think, is extremely challenging. And I have not found a lot of folks that are recognizing that. And so that's what I mean by that is, and I do believe in the vision part of it. We've got to see. Again, we cannot be reactive. We're too reactive. And then you react on what's on today, and then you react on what's tomorrow or it's the next 10 minutes. And sometimes you have to. But in general, the way the society we live in almost drives that because of the speed. And sometimes we have to be the ones, again, to come back and take control and go, I know you want that answer right now, or I know that's a crisis right now, but you know what? We can answer this tomorrow morning and it'll still be okay. Take that time, figure it out. And so it's then those processes and things like that to help put together like-minded but different people. Because ultimately that's what's going to make you successful in today's day and age. You need to put together the most diverse group of thinkers that you can, and then as a leader, get them to agree on the goal, how to get there, and then make sure everybody understands their position within that goal. And then in today's day and age as a leader, in times past, although you are there to lead and support, in most cases, get out of the way.
Right. Let them learn and let them find how to do it. And let me ask you, for you to be thinking this way and for you to get this wise, I would say that I understand you had a very strong foundation of kindness and empathy at the home. You were raised as an Italian Roman Catholic on the West Coast. Did any of those values have to do with the way that you perform your duties today or your behavior?
Absolutely. And I would say, so again, Reader's Digest, I think the foundation that I tell everybody again, and as I said, the challenges that we reach and things that can help us. So second generation Italian, as I tell a lot of times again, when I talk in inner city or to schools, I don't know what it's like to walk around the country as a minority and walk into stores or whatever it is that you deal with. But I grew up with my grandparents and my great uncles telling me of crosses being burned in their yard and not being able to get help because they were Roman Catholic Italian immigrants.
Wow.
So again, that doesn't put me in a position to talk about what some a minority or whatever may be going through. But on the flip side of it, if a minority thinks that I can't have some empathy to understand what that means, then it's harder for us to have a conversation. So very early on, I was, you know, that was the early on. Then with my parents, and once we moved to Phoenix, again, and you could sit there and you take a general culture of, you know, my culture and, you know, open, again, tribal, very tribal us Italians. Mm-hmm. But I'd sit here today at 55 years old, and I can tell you, Amy, I have never, ever heard either one of my parents ever use a derogatory term about anybody. Anybody. If my mother heard my cousins and I say a derogatory term against us, if we called each other WAP or something like that, the wooden spoon was coming out, and the lesson was coming out as to why those words, what they meant.
So then your mother helped.
For somebody if they didn't. What's that?
So then your mother helped shape you.
Of course, no, absolutely. And then I going into entertainment, like I said, so I just, in that moment, is, like I said, being young, my parents actively put me in diverse groups and all of that. And so through my entire life, as I started getting into the professional world, and as we all know, if that isn't common thinking, or if you get into situations where that isn't always the case, where there are people who want to seclude others because of who they are, what they might have done or whatever, it really stuck with me to be the difference. And I tell people one of the things that occurred to me when I was younger, and I tell this story, and it's just like you. I mean, one of the things that's on this part, Amy, I have to tell you, it's about, and you look at me, leadership is about honesty.
Yes.
I am.
I'm so glad you say that.
I can be so, Amy, you are one of the most, just by your book, are one of the most honest people anybody could ever meet.
Thank you.
Because most people would never, never expose themselves like that. And I am so, so honored and impressed by your courage in doing that.
It wasn't easy, but well worth it. I see how it's helped people.
And I think that's important to sit there and do that, but through that entire process and like that, my father, again, he had some challenges, again, because that's, I mean, so again, think about me growing up. Yes, are there challenges and glass ceilings? Yes. But it certainly, I didn't live through the Jim Crow era. Again, I'm not African American, but I'm talking about the environment that we are in. My father, growing through Motorola and engineers in the 50s, you know, he's one of those guys that you see with the white tie and black, you know, I mean, white shirt and black tie and the, you know, pocket protector. You know, the stereotypical of the, you know, white 50-year-old, you know, guy in the 1950s. And I remember one time he came back from Motorola, semiconductor, and laying off people was a constant cycle in that business.
But you know what I'm most curious about is, because I understand how important God was in my life, even though I fell and faltered and, you know, I went through my hard times, but God was very important in my life. Now, I had no other choice. I needed God. Now, you were among incredibly diverse teams of musicians. And how did your faith play a role? Were you able to still have God in your life?
Absolutely.
I mean,
absolutely. And I think twofold, Amy. One, in regards to my faith, and I tell everybody, I am a man of faith. I'm a man that questions religion. And I do that because it is a part of my faith that we should always be working harder to understand what it is we're supposed to be doing. But in that, you're very young. I have had health issues when I was very young. I have some. I still have them with. I do some work. It's called linear scleroderma. And but the long story short is both in. Some things said to me, the kid, you know, may not live to 18, going through doctors, Mayo Clinic, spinal tap. I mean, I just, again,
wow.
I sit that, there, nothing like you.
You know,
I mean,
what?
I sit there, I have trouble going, my challenges are nothing, but I had some challenges as a youth.
This is really amazing. We're going into break, and I really want to talk some more about this, because what you're saying is really, really interesting. But for those that are tuning in, I'm your host, Amy Cabo. You're listening to The Cure. We're live every Friday at 2 p.m. on the radio or amycabo.com or later on as a podcast.
Love is the answer. God is the cure. Reveals from a very sincere and honest position Amy Cabo's life, a warrior who didn't give up and achieved the dream of her life. You can get to know more about her and her story on www.godisthecure.com or buying her book on amazon.com. And now we continue with Amy Cabo and The Cure on 880 The Biz.
Welcome back, and thanks for tuning in. You're listening to The Cure, and I'm your host, Amy Cabo. We're live every Friday at 2 p.m. You can listen on the radio on amycabo.com, and you can always call in 305-541-2350 if you'd like to speak to us. We'd love to hear from you. And please do share your faith if it helped you at work or in your home life. We are joined by Joe Leone. Joe, we were talking about maintaining God in your life no matter what the circumstances may be. I imagine it must be difficult in the entertainment world.
Yes and no. I mean, the perception of what we see today, I can understand that perspective.
I wouldn't know.
but when we went to break, as I said, as growing up, I actually found through that the entertainment industry was one of those places where I felt really the freest to have conversations. And I don't say that saying that everybody agreed or that they weren't tough at times, but it was one of the few places where I found that the group of people that always diversified, that whether that was faith, racism, politics, whatever it was, growing up and again, because of entertainment, the artist across the board. So the artist, I don't care if you draw, you write, you sing, you play music. The artist, I've always told people, you know, everybody wants to complain about rap and what that does to the, you know, our youth and what entertainment does to our youth. And I always remind everybody, I got news for you. If you're complaining about entertainment, all that is the mirror of society. It is not the driver of society.
Okay.
So through that, when you see things, a lot of times in behind the scenes in entertainment, you have the production people, you have the producers, you have the artists, and if it's truly a successful creative endeavor, it is an environment that allows people first and foremost to be themselves. And if you allow people to do that, their talents, knowledge, and blessings that they can bring to any project only sit there and intensify and make anything that you thought capable way more than you probably even thought about.
Nice. And maybe takes away the noise. Joe, you appear to have this great balance of being direct while you're still being refreshingly approachable. How have you achieved this balance?
Well, I mean, like me or not, I think it really goes back to honesty, Amy. I think as a leader, you know, first and foremost is to be honest. Now, look, you know, part of my teachings and what I talk about today is I think even in the environments where a pyramid system works well within a corporate environment, those pyramids have still been squished down tremendously compared to the past. Leadership has got to stay much more connected and to the base of their organization. So there's always a quarterback. There's somebody that has to come up with the plan, has a vision or something. But after that, you have to then be honest first with yourself to get there, then honest with your people as to how you got there. Here's how I got there. Here's my idea. Here's what it is I'd like to do. And then you have to work very, very hard at putting the right team together to execute that as a leader. And that is important to sit there and understand the people and what it is that you need and whatever that endeavor is. Once you put that team together, it is imperative that you are honest with them as to their role within that and within that goal. And even more important to make sure it's clearly defined and communicated to them as far as who owns what. And then, as I said earlier, Amy, I think it's trying to do your best and get out of their way. Have I always done that and been successful in that, as I said? Absolutely not. As you can tell, and you know, things that you had to go through and the things that I had to fight, I'm extremely motivated and a driven person. But I do every day realize that how I, as an individual, can do better. And whether that is a project, whether that is a show, whether that is a need or trying to solve a problem within the community, at the end of the day, we all can do much, much better if we just have the ability to, like I said, look in the mirror and understand what you're doing that's either helping or hindering it. And then as a leader, most of the time, once you put that team together and you have confidence in them, get out of their way and be there to support them and give them the tools and things they need to accomplish what it is you're expecting them to do. And keep the standard. Leadership has to keep the standard.
Is that what you mean by your quote, don't make a difference, be the difference?
Yes, twofold. It is that and my operational side and one of the things that I try at Visions. Although everybody, and you see here, you know, we can talk, and I love talking. That's how you learn and how you can get through ideas. But at the end of the day, if I don't accomplish something with all that talk, there's something in my DNA that really doesn't sit well. So it is about, and when I try and go into companies, and there are times that I talk about just general and my story and try to motivate people and make them understand that they can do it too. But what I also love to do is when I go in and we get into the nitty-gritty and I'm being brought in because there is a problem, an issue, or a goal that's needed. And we sit down and we figure out how to get it accomplished. So that's what I mean is there's a lot of people, even in my industry, in entertainment, that love to sit there and say, and you may agree or disagree with something that they're trying to move forward. And they use the adage, you know, well, I have a platform, so I want to use it. No, I'm sorry, you don't have a platform. You have a stage and a microphone. Now, you can use that to do good and move forward. But if you have a platform, the platform means you're accomplishing things. You're getting things done or at least trying to and purpose and have purpose. So ideas are great, but I'm one of those individuals that want to take that idea and build it.
Right. And you also say that practice makes perfect or persistence pays off. Once you start a project, you should continue and finish it to the end. And I like to say, make it count. Whatever you do, do it right the first time around so you don't have to repeat it, so you don't have to do double the work, and make it count. Because if you make it count, you can be proud of yourself rather than just being a robot doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Agreed. And it's one of the mantras that I tell folks a lot of times when I say about looking in the mirror. I think every leader looks in the mirror and you ask yourself every time, either at the end of the day, end of a project, or if you're moving on to the next, what did I do right? What did I do wrong? And what can I do better?
And isn't constructive criticism wonderful? I used to love constructive criticism, but it's hard. And how do you deal with that when you do have to correct a behavior and you're working with so many diverse people, working in the same team, working on the same project? How do you approach that?
I think that goes back to within Visions where we talk about being involved and insight. And that is knowing your people. And that's, again, when I said the pyramid has gotten more small, you know, the shallower down to the base. You have to find your way. Find your way to continue to have contact with your people, connection with your people, understand what they're going through, and understand that all of that, you know, is still affecting them that when they're with you. And that's understanding how they think. You know, part of the problem with the world we live in today is when you have a group of people that, even in a room, that respect each other and are diverse with the political correctness and everything of the world, it's sometimes difficult to talk about the things that we bring to an organization or a team, whatever, that we bring as an individual. That all of a sudden, if so-and-so has a certain strength, that somehow means so-and-so doesn't have it, and rather than looking at the negative. So it's understanding your people, where they're coming from and all of that. And if you do that, I think that gives you better tools to then how to communicate to them. I tell people all the time that if you know your people, a lot of instincts in regards to leadership is you bring all your team together and you want to sit there and you tell everybody, you know, before we get started today, I got to tell everybody what Amy did yesterday. And you go through the litany and you sit there, and because you wanted Amy to feel good about herself and what she did. But, and again, I'm just using an example,
that's
Amy.
That's a great idea.
But maybe Amy's the type of person that really is like, oh, sure, yeah, you're just saying this for everybody because, you know, you want everybody to do that. Amy may be the person that you need to bring into your office by yourself and go and say the same thing just to Amy. That may be more important to Amy because of how her brain thinks, how she comes to approach things, versus somebody else that may just thrive in that. They'll sit there and go, wow, he basically, you know, really set me up in the group. But that has to come from your people, because again, same scenario. If I don't know that and I sit there and I think I am making Amy feel really, really good today because I'm starting a meeting like this, I might have just started her whole day the worst way she can be. Inside, she may be, now that flower may be coming in, because in the way she thinks and how she sees herself, she didn't want that recognition in front of everybody. And so I've closed that flower now today because I did know that wasn't the way to sit there and really touch Amy.
So what I'm hearing,
what it comes down to is I ended up touching myself because I was out there going, she did great, and I'm
right.
Trying to
it made
say
you
that.
Feel
really,
good about
I was not
it.
Accomplishing what I wanted.
So what I'm hearing is not just about having an open dialogue or acknowledging the person and getting them to believe in themselves, but actually pointing out their accomplishments just the same way you would point out their shortcomings, and getting to know them so that you can be, you know, so that you can be more sensitive towards how you handle situations, and building a good rapport with the people that you work with. Did I
absolutely
get that right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I try, and you know, I tell people that my Zen world, there are two places in the world that I can go to: Maui, and I have a cabin up in the woods in Utah. And I tell people that if I get off the plane in Maui, or as soon as I get up to my cabin, I can I physically feel my mind and body go, and I'm able just to let things go, relax, recharge. But what I tell people is we have to remember, some other people's cabin in Maui is the fastest roller coaster.
Mm. Okay.
Some, you know, so think about that. If you're a leader, and that's how you, and so again, take it to now, moving forward. You got a team. You're on a project. You've been doing it for a couple years or a year or so. You're feeling the tension. You feel, okay, we got to kind of get out of this. And so you get this bright idea. Hey, let's all go up to the cabin and get some woods and do all of that. Well, if a third of your team wants to, and their woods is a roller coaster, a third of your team, you're not doing that, having any benefit to. So it's knowing your people to understand that. So maybe how you get your team back together is a third of them you're taking to Disneyland, and the other third you're taking to the cabin, and maybe the other third you're taking to the beach because they love water. And then you get them back all together, and oh my God, they're back on the same page again because they found a way to get on their own page again.
Excellent. If Joe, if you can give one piece of advice to today's business leaders, what would that be?
Throw away the playbook, pick up a history book, and grab a psychic 8-ball from the 70s, and good luck.
That's a good one. I love it.
And I guess how I would, somewhat define that, Amy, is I use the example in my talk of Sears and JCPenney.
Okay.
Both of those companies, if they would have had insight and understanding, probably Amazon might not have ever occurred.
Oh.
Now, I'm not saying that they wouldn't have competition, et cetera, or somebody might not be able to come in the marketplace and do better. But they had a lock on the marketplace marketing-wise.
Okay.
And in regards to retail, that I think even would have done better than Amazon, because folks like my parents in their 80s and 70s, et cetera, where technology may be intimidating to them, mm-hmm. would be willing to figure it out because they'd go online to order from the Sears Roebuck catalog.
Right.
But they didn't see it. Those companies didn't, again, vision, didn't see it, didn't see it coming, and they got basically passed by.
That's why we need people like you, Joe. That's why we need that's exactly why we need people like you, Joe. That's exactly why. But, you know, we've come to the end of another show, and it's the end of the hour. But thank you so much for everyone that's been listening. A big thank you to Joe Leone for being on the show. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Boris. I appreciate the time, and I hope we have an opportunity sometime to speak again. Time and discussion is something that I think we are put on this planet for, always to continue the conversation.
Super important.
Definitely, and God bless you.
Thank you both, and you also, and to your family.
For more information on Joe Leone, can be found on amycabo.com under guests. Please visit and invite Joe Leone as a speaker. This has been The Cure. I'm your host, Amy Cabo. thank you all for listening. Don't forget to check out my website, amycabell.com, for previous shows.
Paid for by IMIC Incorporated.
The Cure with Amy Cabo is brought to you by IMIC Research. Life can bring many difficult situations, domestic violence, addictions, poverty, and even sexual abuse by your loved ones. Welcome, Amy Cabo and The Cure.